With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine.
Already dying. It's Andy's Girls. It's episode. I really don't know. The AG gods are telling me it's 142. I don't believe that. I feel like last week was 142. Anyway, OMFing G. Andy's Girls hath arrived. It is Sunday afternoon-ish. I kind of slept in a little bit today because I made the huge strategic error of taking a nap yesterday because it was snowy and wintry in New York City, aka everybody was refusing to leave their apartments, myself included, and accidentally fell asleep. I am a very proud anti-napper. I am the opposite of Dorinda Medley. Every day at 4 o'clock, I do not get into bed in a nightie and fall asleep for beauty rest for an hour. I am perhaps in bed in my nightie at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but I do not sleep during that time because I don't believe in it. It's lifestyle choice, okay, you guys? And it happened, and then I ended up being up until 3 o'clock in the morning because I accidentally fell asleep for like 90 minutes yesterday. Anyway, so I watched War of the Worlds, which was, it's a quality, it's on HBO now, you guys, if you have a HBO. It's a quality Tom Cruise movie, and I always think of the time when his career and reputation fell apart during that press tour. That was when he quote unquote fell in love with Katie Holmes. And so I really appreciate that special time in his film career. And it's actually genuinely a quality movie. Anywho, I'm so excited for this week's AG. I had a conversation with Dr. Jeff, who you guys will remember from Real Housewives of Atlanta, Real Housewives of Potomac. He's done several other non-Bravo reality shows. And I was curious to sit down with him because, listen, Lanithia Leaks is not having a great season. And Dr. Jeff was so crucial and integral to her kind of emotional journey, I would say, season 7 of Atlanta. And so it was a complete pleasure to talk to him. And also, you know, during our conversation, which you guys will hear shortly, I had some satchels of gold for the soul. So I wanted to get his thoughts on craziness happening on other franchises, both Atlanta, I think I had some Potomac stuff, Beverly Hills, New York. Wanted to get his thoughts on Bethany and Jason Hoppe's custody battle, several different scenarios and situations with housewives in the news, in the world, going crazy, and really wanted to get his thoughts on, you know, how they should handle it. I mean, it's kind of interesting to sit down with someone who is a true clinical, is that what they call it? Clinical psychologist? Sure. Clinical psychologist. And really, you know, the whole joy for me of Andy's Girls, obviously it's talking about the episodes as it happens, but it's really talking about the choices that these women make and how they behave and how they respond. Obviously it's heightened when it's on reality TV, but it's also kind of like opening a door on the housewives to understanding, what's going on in their brain chemistry. I mean, like, what really propels these women to make the kind of like behavioral choices that they do? And so talking to Dr. Jeff and getting that kind of inside scoop on like a medical spiritual level was really, really interesting. So I hope you guys enjoy that conversation. And so there's a lot for us to discuss. So first off, I have to say, shout out to Kate Casey, who had me on Reality Life with Kate Casey, the most recent episode talking about all things Married to Medicine. So if you guys want to hear my thoughts, and why wouldn't you, on just my ongoing love for all things Dr. Damon. And I think I got into a little bit of the evolution of Toya and Mariah's friendship and some other interesting stuff. You should definitely listen to that episode. And also on Thursday, I had the joy of having an afternoon kiki with Her Holiness Amy Phillips on Reality Checked on Radio Andy. And that was amazing. She and her awesome producer were in the Sirius XM studio for Radio Andy in LA. I was in the studio in New York. And you can see each other in the studio with the glory of Skype. Shout out technology. Shout out hashtag new audio. And it was fantastic. I spent an hour talking to her about some housewife stuff in the news, some Southern Charm news. I think we got into a little craziness about some stuff happening with Dina Manzo that I wasn't aware of. And then we broke down the most recent episode of New Jersey. And she is so funny, so smart. We had listener calls calling in, heard from AGs calling in, which I absolutely loved. And it was a complete delight. So if you weren't able to tune in on Thursday, you can get that from SiriusXM On Demand. And P.S. SiriusXM has a 3-month free trial. So not to say that I definitely signed up for it, but I definitely signed up for it. And you can as well to listen to that episode. I promise it was definitely a lot of fun for me selfishly to do. So I hope that you guys enjoyed that as well. And speaking of selfishness, I had some interesting reactions to Brandi Redmond's apology situation, shenanigan, whatever you would call it. So Brandi put out on her pod with Stephanie, I think it's called a weekly dose of BS, which frankly was this special episode as well. But Brandi put out a I don't know what you would call it, 13-minute something or other that I immediately responded to on Instagram, where it essentially started with her sobbing and went downhill from there. So if you guys aren't aware of what Brandi Redmond has been dealing with online, and by Brandi Redmond dealing, I mean all of us because of her behavior and actions, Brandi put up an Instagram video a couple years ago, maybe three-ish, of just a legit full-on racist caricature video where she's mocking Asian people, and it's a really bad look. And it was an Instagram video that she says she deleted 3 years ago immediately when people started telling her it was soups racist. She says she put out an apology soon after. It randomly appeared the week before last, I want to say, right when shit was hitting the fan on Dallas with Leanne's antics, and streets are talking and they're saying it was put out by Steve. I heard it was put out by Steve, Leanne's wedding planner, and also Leanne. Brandi herself seems to have a slightly different idea of who put it out, which we'll get to. But Brandi's reaction to the video coming out was not initially apologetic. In fact, for several days after, she was making jokes about it, saying she was ready for SNL, saying she would do it again. And that's when shit really hit the fan for her, because had she really apologized 3 years ago and listened to herself, or I don't know, watched her behavior on the most recent Dallas reunion, she would understand that if you behave in a racist manner, you should really shut the fuck up and listen to people who are affected and not try to deny its existence or reality as something racist, or defend yourself, or try to put the blame on other people when it's really your behavior. But ultimately, you know, the people who are most targeted and most are upset are those in vulnerable communities. And frankly, as a white woman of means on a reality show, she has enough of a platform. So maybe she should either use her platform to apologize directly to those people or support organizations that support them and not necessarily herself. So that's maybe what I was thinking she would do. Just understanding that she seems to have enough awareness of Leanne's racist behavior to maybe look in the mirror at her own and or also understand that on the most superficial, by which I mean like truly top layer for this, from like a strategic crisis PR perspective, truly shut the fuck up and don't make light of it. Because if you make light of it, if you say, I was really sorry 3 years ago, I apologize, I took it down, I moved on, then it comes out, it really makes me discount that previous apology that you said that you made that I have no actual proof or record of, when you immediately make light of it and say that you would do stuff over and over again. Then Brandi checks herself into racism rehab, aka some sort of wellness facility. And I don't actually mean to be a dick about it, because it sounds like she became incredibly depressed and potentially almost suicidal, perhaps not like actively suicidal, but thinking about suicidal ideation in the sense that she didn't know how she could go on. And that is a really serious topic. And so it sounds like she needed to take some time to herself to kind of collect her thoughts. And then she came out with this 13-minute emergency episode of Weekly Dose of BS where she cried for 13 minutes. So I started listening to it and then immediately started like IG-gramming while I was going through it, because I really truly needed an outlet to say like, what the fuck? So if you have the ability to sit through it and not lose your mind, I would suggest that you do that. I guess. I mean, it really could have been to Brandi a 2-minute long statement that said something along the lines or where she said something along the lines of like, I fucked up, I was racist. It doesn't matter how long ago the video was posted, and it doesn't matter who posted it, because ultimately I was wrong. BCC pump rules. And I did go away for a week to a facility for me to recollect my thoughts. And P.S., here are the organizations I donated a matching gift to, so that I understood that I had the privilege, economic, white, whatever, to go away somewhere when I was upset about how my behavior affected others. And then, like a boomerang, came back and fucked with me. And here are the places who don't necessarily have that kind of economic fiscal freedom to go off to a nice wherever the fuck she went to recollect my thoughts. And so here's that money, or I don't know, the amount of money for like a single episode of Dallas this season. That would have been a nice donation to make. And also that context doesn't matter. And frankly, maybe this isn't really about Brandy going through her feelings of being sad and shameful and making this into some very warped, very strange, self-care themed kind of conversation. Maybe really focus your energy, your platform, your capacity for learning on whatever the fuck you actually learned about the people that you upset, the marginalized community that you upset, as well as the allies and Dallas fans who immediately told you that what you had done was wrong. Like, the second that you decided to make light of it, you went down the immediate wrong path. And now she's on a completely different, equally fucked path with what she said on that 13-minute emergency episode. And then she followed it up with an Instagram post that says the following: thank you to these souls that cried with me, prayed with me, and were a positive light in my life and helped my family during this difficult time. Stephanie and Travis, Deandra and Jeremy, Mama D, what? Carrie and Eduardo, my parents, my family, close friends, and my amazing husband and children. I'm so grateful to God helping me through this, allowing me to heal and love myself. To those that set out to hurt me, know I still have compassion for you in my heart. Cameron and Steve, and again, Steve is Leanne's wedding planner. I forgive you, but I won't be your victim anymore. Thank you all for hearing my truth in my heart. Hashtag love yourself. Have a beautiful and blessed weekend, my friends, with an emoji of the prayer hands and two red hearts. My fucking God. I mean, maybe she is a good housewife, because this is the most self-centered, ludicrous, meandering, misguided response that I have seen. She is doing essentially exactly what Leanne would do had she been allowing herself, or anyone allowing her, to be on social during her racism arc, when episodes were airing and, you know, BCC the reunion. This is insane. Like, this, Brandy, this is insane. This is so stupid. Also, P.S., speaking of Stephanie, Deandra, Mama D, I guess, Carrie, all those people that said Leanne's behavior was racist and how dare she and we need to stand up for people, yada, yada, where the fuck were all of y'all? Because if I am sitting through the reunion, which is a strange warp experience as it is, knowing what was happening in real time with Brandy's resurfaced video, and you guys are all standing up for what's right and we're ignoring your like political allegiances and whatever, which are in stark contrast with what you were trying to say during the reunion. If we are believing that you believe any of that, then show us that you really mean it by saying that Brandy's behavior was wrong. Not a single person said that what she did was wrong that I have seen, aside from people in Leanne's camp who have a vested interest in burying Brandy. The fact that she references Cameron is such a weird, shady, shitty, rumor spreading piece of bullshit, where you're essentially explicitly saying that you forgive these people. I don't give a shit who resurface these videos, what vendetta they have, because ultimately, while it sucks that they did that, it's really not about them. And if you are taking accountability, which obviously she is not, you start by saying, I'm sorry, I fucked up, it was wrong. And the reason it was wrong, P.S., was because it was racist. Like, call it what it is. Say what the fuck you did wrong, and then what you're going to do to make it better. don't say, oh God, I learned a lot and I really love myself. I could give a shit if you love yourself. That's not why people are upset. They're not upset because you're dealing with like low self-esteem issues, which is a conversation for another day. They're upset because you put out a racist video and then made fun of the anger that people felt about said racism. And then you went away to, again, racist rehab, not to make light of it. And frankly, I had a lot of secondhand like embarrassment listening to her cry because I don't want to listen to anybody cry. And I feel immediate empathy for it. But this is completely disingenuous, the way that she's gone about doing it. It just shows what blind privilege Brandy has, which again might make her an interesting housewife. But it's just shitty. It's shitty. And frankly, it's trashy. And the fact that she included Cameron and Steve and then I'm sure got immediate backlash from that and then deleted them and updated the post is, again, another sign that Brandy is like completely not willing to kind of engage in these kinds of conversations on the most basic level. And the fact that Stephanie was putting on social media like, I'm praying for her, thanks sweetie, love you, to everybody that was like, we love Brandy, it doesn't matter, she's great, poop jokes, yada yada, it's asinine. These people all look ridiculous. There's been a lot of people saying, why is Dallas going on? And based on this shit, it's like, ugh, is this just gonna be a gross watch? Because season 5, man, season 4 done fucked up. I need something else. This is just ridiculous. And then you have other franchises that are at the top of their game and or dealing with real issues and doing it in a way where I actually am interested in watching. And then there's just like the poop hat of it all on Dallas. I don't even know what to say. Speaking of not even knowing what to say, Pump Rules, fascinating. 2 episodes in, couldn't care less. Watched it at 30% capacity. Episode 2, Max and Brett, who are new cast members, got in a little bit of trouble, just a little, P.S. barely, because a bunch of tweets were resurfaced from several years ago. Again, it doesn't matter how long ago, where they were just racist AF. My assumption was that they would be fired because, frankly, if we're going to look at this from a business level, this wasn't a Jack situation. It wasn't a Sandoval or Schwartz situation where these were cast members who were seemingly needed for these shows, where they would be impacted. These are new people who nobody gives a fuck about. So my thought was initially like, oh, they'll get fired. Their firing will be announced now. We'll watch them for the rest of the season and then off they go. It would have been the lightest possible lift for Team LVP, Team Pump Rules, to sanction these guys. And frankly, it doesn't matter if it was from 2012 or yesterday. Youth does not imply racism. So whether or not it was 8 years ago or now, it truly doesn't matter. 8 years ago, I was, I don't know, going to a sample sale and spending money I don't have, building up a nice amount of credit card debt. I wasn't saying racist shit on Twitter or in my own life. I didn't do that when I was a kid, and I don't do that as an adult. And frankly, it doesn't matter when it was done. Again, it doesn't matter if it was an Instagram video from 3 years ago or a tweet from 8. It is still racist. This is not a difficult conversation for people, aka white people, to be able to understand. And it is bullshit when you start putting the clock on behavior like this, because it implies that this was ever okay or ever something that someone would go through as they mature or get older. It makes absolutely no sense to me. So anyway, my assumption would be, considering, you know, LVP's stance of, you know, I'm the victim, bullying is wrong, and my cast member should have been fired from Raider Online Gate last season, I would think this would be the lightest possible lift for her to fire these people, who, again, aren't currently bringing a ton of value to her business empire. So why side with them? But that's not what happened. She put out a statement via her rep that says she doesn't condone any of the heinous comments made in the past. I'm glad they understand the severity of their offenses and have shown utmost remorse and contrition. I embrace a community of diversity and do not tolerate bigotry of any form within my workplace. Max and Brett were both appropriately ashamed of their past obnoxious teenage arrogance. And I forgot to be racist when I was, you know, listening to NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. Wow. And casual use of unacceptable terms. While both have now matured as adults, they've shown remorse for their private, reckless, defamatory statements. Cool, cool, cool. So just to remember, James was fired from whatever the fuck he was pretending to do on Pump Rules for fat shaming Katie. So when that kind of bigotry takes place, he's let go. But when two white guys say racist thing, racist thing, racist thing, racist thing again, it was because they were teenagers and arrogant and used unacceptable terms, aka racist terms, casually. This looks so bad for Lisa. I truly don't understand why these people do these things and make life harder for everyone by not forcing people to take responsibility. Again, Max and Brett don't matter. Like, if you look at this from a business perspective, they're not bringing anything to the table that you can't get from one of 10 million other quasi-unattractive, tall-ish, white, brown-haired guys who are actors slash waiters looking for their next shot on reality TV. It's not like they're bringing any value that you can't get from one of millions of other completely available people living in your town called Hollywood who, P.S., may not also be racist. You know, like, this is a learning opportunity that I would think would strengthen Lisa's reputation that she has created and tried to spread, where she is a person that promotes diversity, as you can see from her currently all white cast. I mean, I know that brunettes are in there, so that has to bring something. It's so weird to me. This week has just been, the last couple of days have been so strange because I can't even get into the Harry and Meghan thing. That's a conversation for another day. But from like a crisis comms per strategy, happy Sunday, crisis comms strategy, there's a way to do things and there's the way that Lisa and Brandy have done things. And it's just so surprising to me. Shout out to Lala for at least acknowledging that this is complete bullshit and putting out an IG story. Maybe she also tweeted as well that was like, this is fucked up. Like, this is not okay. Lala saying it. P.S. Mazel to Lala for coming out with a new podcast with a rant. I will be listening. But if Lala can say it, why can't Lisa Vanderpump? It's just so fucking odd that people think that if they can ignore what's happening on the blogs in real time that somehow they can survive it. I just don't understand. It's just so fucking weird. I mean, I know that there have maybe been some issues about racist comments affecting some previous seasons of Pump Rules, BCC Stassi Schroeder, but this is, again, the easiest possible lift. They are not an investment in the franchise or the Pump Rules brand. So why allow them to add like a stain to this unnecessarily? It would have been so fucking, I don't care if they're integral and crucial to the rest of the season. We're two episodes in. I feel like I've been watching this season for a year so far. Like, it's insane to me. It is completely insane to me that they wouldn't be reprimanded in a real way instead of what Lisa's doing, which is like lightly tapping them on the shoulder and being like, I don't know, 8 years ago you said some stuff that was too casual and unacceptable, but apparently it's acceptable enough for me to kind of keep things moving and having you guys maintain employment, you know, tell Katie that she's beautiful. I don't know, it's all very, very strange. Anyway, before I get into this has been like a real unloading moment. Anyway, before I get into all things Dr. Jeff, and I'm so excited for you guys to listen to that conversation. I can't wait to hear your thoughts. Just a couple things about this week of Atlanta and New Jersey. First off, I am so grateful to God / Andrew Cohen above that we only have two franchises right now. I don't know what's happening with Beverly Hills Trailer. I'm assuming it'll come out any day, ditto New York. But my God, having four Housewife franchises on at one time is rough, tough stuff. So I'm very appreciative that we only have two. I don't understand where things are with this audio and or recording. It really truly to me feels like Nini is Phaedra-ing and trying to make or reveal private, secret, negative traits that Cynthia might exhibit that we don't necessarily see. And her only way to do that is by making shit up. It feels like what Phaedra was trying to do with Candy. And that seems to be like a symptom of the greater disease called jealousy, which frankly can be fatal for your career. I don't get it. I talked to Dr. Jeff about it. He says that he doesn't think that Nini, well, you'll hear his thoughts on what Nini, what he thinks has happened there and Nini's perspective. But I don't get it. I mean, like, is Nini trying to say, she was saying in her confessionals, like, this is the real Cynthia. But in those moments, what I saw was somebody getting really upset and angry and trying to find out the truth. I mean, and frankly, the stakes were a lot higher, obviously, with like Candy and the Portia Phaedra situation when you're talking about somebody potentially conspiring to commit an act of sexual violence. This is like Cynthia was maybe talking shit. But first off, A, that's your job. You're on a reality show. B, y'all weren't friends at that point. So if she was talking shit to Yovana, that bitch from Clark, or anybody else, I don't understand why that was bad to begin with, unless she was saying something explicitly terrible that we're not even hearing. So while I understand Cynthia's perspective of like, who the fuck was recording me? And also, can I please hear that? Which is an invasion of privacy and confidence and friendship and whatever else. If she was shit talking Nini, Nini's shit talking Cynthia. So what the fuck is the problem? It doesn't make any sense. I don't know that we're ever going to hear an audio, quote unquote, or a recording. But even if we did, I don't really care, unless Nini's version of this audio is her like being secretly like Skyped into this or something where she can hear the audio where it's happening. It doesn't make any sense. I don't really care. It feels dumb to me. And sometimes that's the undoing for these housewives when they make just dumb mistakes, whether it's ego or anger or sadness or whatever. These are the lies that can take you down. And to Lanithia, this feels like it might be the lie. It's just so stupid. It's just so stupid. And then you have to like add on a lie on top of a lie. And P.S. you're being recorded for a TV show while all of this happens. So ultimately, we're going to have to understand. And it felt like she was gaslighting everybody else in that hotel room when she's like, oh, it's not about this, it's not about that. And when Kenya's kind of holding her face to the fire a little bit and saying, like, tell us explicitly who it is. And she doesn't have a reaction. So Nini just responds with emotion. Like, that's not a great indicator. Like, why even bring this up unless you were willing to say who it is? Otherwise, there's other stuff for you and Cynthia to fight about. It just feels like Nini's trying to show that she's the bigger person, just like sending that fake congratulatory letter to a gossip blog at the same time you're sending it to your friend on camera or having it be delivered to your friend on camera. It feels like she's trying to do her own little reputation tour, but just like Taylor's album, it might not be a success. So I don't know. It's kind of strange to me. I talk about Portia and Dennis's re-engagement with Dr. Jeff. So just listen to that part of the conversation. And then New Jersey, again, I was on Reality Check talking to Amy Phillips about it for an hour this week. And it was I had such a great time. You know, I don't really understand what's going on with David and Dolores. I don't understand these like weird, awkward scenes where Dolores is trying to get him to say that he's going to propose to her. And he's like, oh, look, the weather is nice today. He's telling you how he wants the relationship to go by showing you what his ideal relationship looks to him. So A, is that something you're really comfortable with? And B, how's an engagement ring going to change this? Like, Dolores has said repeatedly in order to sort of apologize for her relationship as it currently exists, that his first love is his job. So either you care about that or you don't. But I don't see how a sign of commitment in the form of a ring is going to change any real facet of the relationship. So Are you okay with him going to spy school instead of supporting your job as a housewife or not? And regardless of that, why does changing the status of your relationship in terms of going from girlfriend, boyfriend to like roommate to fiance matter? Because a ring isn't going to change this guy. Like, it really isn't. Kim Zolciak song, like, the ring don't mean a thing. Like, it doesn't, it's not going to change anything. So why are you fighting so hard to change it? Is it because of the pressure from your family? Is it because of your bestie ex-husband thinking this guy isn't good enough for you? I don't totally get it. But if I was Dolores, I would be having sort of an internal dialogue and conversation with myself of what am I really looking for? If I'm looking for the kind of relationship that Dorinda and John had, where Dorinda's happy with it, maybe John isn't, but Dorinda's happy to go to drinks or dinner a couple times a week, he stays over, he doesn't, and then I get my me time, then that's great, you do you. But if you're looking for something a little bit more traditional, you're not going to find it with this guy. He's telling you he's not available for that. And his amount of love for you doesn't matter. If your love language is like time and attention, he doesn't speak that language. He is not fluent in that dialect. So decide for yourself what you want and stop apologizing if you already have it. It doesn't appear to me that she does, unless she feels like for the show she should look like she's yearning for something else, or unless it's being suggested to her that her like plot this season or her story is in relation to getting that kind of commitment from him. You care about getting the symbol or you don't. If you do care, then maybe this relationship shouldn't continue because he's not comfortable giving it to you or giving it to you on camera, which frankly is sort of the same thing when it comes to all this stuff. And if you don't care, then let's talk about something else. And if you don't have anything else to talk about, then that's really the problem. It's just, I get some kind of like secondhand awkwardness from this because it seems so clear what it is that David is willing to do and how he's willing to love. And if they're on different sides of the coin, then like, you know, separate. I don't know. But the house is nice too. I don't know. I really don't know. Man, I don't know. I don't know. I watched this week's episode. It was so good. So many emotional moments. You know, Margaret just continues to be such a rock star as a housewife. Even when she makes errors or whatever, however, oh, I wouldn't have thrown water, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. She's so dynamic. Talking so openly about her lawsuit issues. Such a rarity. God, Beverly Hills, I wish that they had an iota of the kind of clarity that Margaret has, where she's like, I'm not ashamed of this. This is my reality. This is what's going on. It's a huge financial pressure. I need to sell this land. Before I do, I'm going to throw a drag brunch. And, you know, she's kind of just making her way through. It just makes you, it makes her so much more endearing to me. Because that's just what she's going through right now. And her relationship with her mother, where they've had these flipped roles their entire lives, and maybe she's trying to change it and maybe she's not. And she has this moment of vulnerability where she's like, I don't want to talk shit about my mom. She's getting kind of teary. But, you know, sometimes talking about the reality of what you're going through with your parents and the fact that it's not always tidy and clean and neat. And, you know, we love you so much. Where there are these kinds of fissures and these damaged spots that don't just go away with time. Sometimes they deepen, and sometimes you just have to, in order to continue on, acknowledge these rough patches and inconsistencies. When your parent is more like a child and you have to take on that role, that's really tough. Like, no matter the kind of jokes you can make and whatever else, like, mothering your mom is not easy. It's not easy as a child, and it's not easy as an adult. And it just makes me love Margaret more. And also, low-key, one of my favorite moments of New Jersey this season is fucking Jen Aiden, her husband, Dr. Aiden, because I can't bear to learn his name. Not that he's, you know, he's fine, whatever, I don't care. I just think of him as Dr. Aiden. Googling the worth of Jackie's Hampton's house was like, mwah, like, chef's kiss. fantastic, high quality housewife fuckery. That is something I would do in my free time because I am an asshole and I absolutely want to know that kind of stuff. How much is she renting it for? What are the comps in the neighborhood? I thought it was fantastic, superb, and high quality. And I'm so glad it was included because it's that kind of like almost non sequitur, like, what the fuck is this doing in relation to everything else? But so perfect, sublime, not really catty, I guess, like money catty, but in the best possible way. Better than Cats the movie will ever be. Just so deeply entertaining that I couldn't help but love it. And frankly, Jen Eden is the secret sauce of New Jersey this season. I'm not afraid to say it. Anyway, I don't want to throw water on the clock. I've been chatting for a little bit of time. I do want to pivot a la Ross and Rachel and turn, or a la Ross Moving Furniture rather. Yay, Friends, no longer on Netflix. Don't know how to watch it. Didn't after it aired. I do want to pivot to the conversation that I had with Dr. Jeff. It was really interesting. I can't wait to hear your thoughts. So guys, let's transition to that little therapy kiki where we talk the good, the bad, and the ugly of reality TV and all things really RHOA and RHOP. So listen to that conversation and I can't wait to hear your thoughts. Enjoy. You guys, I'm so excited for a different kind of Andy's Girls conversation. I am here on the People's Couch and am thrilled to be joined by Dr. Jeff Gardier. Dr. Jeff, welcome to AG.
Thank you for having me here. And Sarah, I already love your style. The way you set up the intimacy.
Listen.
The energy, yes. The smoldering energy you have, the smoke gets in your eyes kind of voice. I really love it.
Thank you so much. Let's tell my therapist and psychiatrist you said that right after so I can get a 5-star on Yelp. Dr. Jeff, I want to tell the listeners who I know are familiar with your work a little bit about you. So you are considered America's psychologist, one of the most widely sought after experts in the field of mental health. In addition to having a private practice in Manhattan, can't wait to schedule a session with you. You're a prolific author and an associate professor and course director of behavioral medicine at Touro College of Osteopathic Medicine here in New York City. And of course, no stranger to reality TV with numerous appearances, just a small number, including Love and Hip Hop New York in Atlanta, Paternity Court, Couples Court, and of course, The Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Yes.
Dr. Jeff, can I call you Dr. Jeff?
Yes, please.
I just like saying Dr. Jeff out loud. I'm very into it. So I'm so excited to talk to you. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing really great. And it's wonderful to be on with you. What a great experience. Absolutely. And you're back on the couch again.
I'm back on the couch. I'm here on the People's Couch. And I have so many questions for you. So listen, I rewatched in prep for this conversation season 7 of Atlanta because you were such an integral part for that season during the episodes itself, but also during the reunion. And it was interesting. I haven't watched season 7 in a second. And when I rewatched it, anticipating our conversation today, I had a different experience and a different response. So I want to just talk to you about your journey as a private practitioner. Yes. And is now a figurehead on several different reality shows. How did this all begin?
My goodness. I really have to think about that because so many things have happened in my career. I would say, and I guess you would agree, right, Sarah, that most clinical psychologists don't kind of have the arc in their storyline the way that I seem to do. But I think it may have all started with Mona Scott Young with the Love and Hip Hop series, working with her. She happens to be, like me, a Haitian American,
sac passé,
as we like to say.
Love, love, love.
And so I guess if you do okay on just one reality show, people come a calling, you know, they come a knocking at the door. And there aren't that many psychologists out there, you know, other than maybe Dr. Phil and some of the others who are doing
Ayanla.
Something. Ayanla, who's an incredible social worker, great energy. clergy.
What is her title? Is she a licensed social worker?
I believe she is a licensed social worker.
Okay, got
it. So even if she wasn't working on TV,
she could have
a private practice.
Got it.
She's the real deal for sure. But I guess making those appearances on Love and Hip Hop with Jocelyn, getting into a tussle with Jocelyn and with her man, I think just, you know, really it just busted open the doors for all sorts of reality that I continue to do even today.
So what led to the introduction with Atlanta Housewives specifically? Who got in touch with you? How did they explain the dynamics? How did all of that work?
Well, it's an individual that I call Carlos King, the great Carlos King. I call him King Carlos.
Amazing.
He was very much a part of the Housewives of Atlanta as a producer, an executive producer. Mm. And the story, the way it's been told to me, is that NeNe Leakes herself, my frenemy, as I like to call her, my frenipatient, as I like to call her, saw some of the work that I had done on television and spoke with Carlos, and then Carlos reached out to me.
So you began your appearances on Atlanta by counseling NeNe, her husband Greg, and their family. Is
and
that correct?
And their family, that's right. All of the children from Greg's first family.
Right.
Because part of the issue they were having as far as their marriage was that he was kind of like split in two. You know, he had to take care of his kids who had their own issues from his first marriage. Then he had to take care of the kids that he had with NeNe.
Right.
And she just felt, you know, NeNe.
Right.
She just felt that she wasn't getting enough attention. So she actually called me in to do family counseling with the entire family, and then couples counseling with her and Greg.
So here's my question. So when this happens, when you're counseling someone who obviously needs support and needs help, and it's also being filmed for reality TV, what is the minutia of it all? Do you meet with them separately before the cameras are there? Are you introduced to them first time with the cameras on when you're like arriving to their door or meeting in the office? How does that work?
Absolutely. And of course, your experience speaks for itself. Yes. They don't want to spoil it by us having a therapy session beforehand or meeting each other before the session, because they don't want anything to happen. They want the dynamic to be fresh, to be new, to be explosive.
Yeah.
Let's be honest about that, within the session. So it's the first time usually that I'm meeting them. It's as you see me walk through the office doors, or they're coming in through the office doors. It's fresh. And I quite honestly, I can't really do a psychosocial history the way that I normally would with the patient. So everything is fast forwarded. And you have to do this intense crisis intervention in real TV time, something that would take probably 8 or 9 sessions.
Right.
You have to be able to accomplish within one session, within a 60-minute period. And then, of course, they edit it down to, you know, the 4 or 5 minutes that you end up seeing.
How did you prepare for your first session with them? Had you watched any Atlanta Housewives? What was your... what did you know about NeNe before you stepped into that room?
Well, I'm ashamed to say this, but I will say it because I'm an honest person, and you have to be an honest person as a shrink, right? The only television that I really watch involves zombies and blood.
Does work actually for some of these Housewives shows.
Right. Yeah. Well, in some ways, right?
Better prep.
Especially when they say, you know, The Walking Dead, beware of the living, right?
Yeah. Yep. That's Dallas Housewives for you.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beware of the living. Don't worry about The Walking Dead. They're harmless. The only thing I knew about NeNe was that she was a very extreme personality, that she was the foundation on which the Housewives of Atlanta was being built.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know really much about her other than that she's larger than life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've met her. She is larger than
life. Yeah, she's a real personality with a capital P.
And she's a tall person. She takes care of herself. And she's just dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, just explosive in everything she does. And, you know, and it's no secret, you know, I still work with Greg and Nene, you know, doing private work and so on.
Do you?
Yes, yes. It's no secret. She's, you know, she's amazing. She's put that out on Twitter. She's put it out there. She's talked about it with Andy. Andy asked her, I believe, in one of the last reunions when she was again thinking of breaking up with Greg.
Yeah.
He asked her, are you working with Dr. Jeff? And she said, yes. But the thing that I found out about her, Sarah, which was the most amazing thing of all, is not only is she one of the hardest working women in show business, and Greg is a very sweet man and really the force behind her. They are a dynamic duo. So I don't think they can ever break up. So no, the spoiler alert there.
They're
they
together
really
for life.
Need one another.
Yeah.
But she is one of the funniest people I have ever met in my life. And we know that she does some stand-up comedy once in a while. She is genuinely a funny person. The joke that she told the story that she told that I loved is when, you know, she's doing her green screen thing and talking about, well, here comes Dr. Jeff. She didn't call me Dr. Jeff. She called me Dr. Ring.
Oh.
And for those of us, you know, of course, you all can't see, but I wear this large green ring.
It looks like a big jade. It's
gorgeous.
Yeah,
and what it is, it's just sea glass.
Oh,
so immediately when she said, and let's see what Dr. Ring has to say,
God.
I was like, this woman is right on.
How did that opinion of her as this really vibrant person connect with the fact that you were seeing her at moments of crisis when she almost seemed combative about receiving counsel?
Yeah. I'm so glad that you brought that up, because when I did the group session with them and she got up and walked out, I can't tell you how many therapist types came up to me and said, well, you kind of let that go out of control. And I said, well, if you know Nene Leakes, right? It's not about control. She's got to do her own thing.
Right.
And so she has to learn from, you know, perhaps getting up and leaving a session, what that means as far as the dynamics, what it means for the ladies who stayed, and we did more of that session. But it just really is a crystal clear example that she is a force of nature. And so you have to work with her in a different way than you would work with most people.
And it felt like watching that episode and rewatching it, it felt like she was having a moment where she was viewing herself in her head sort of as the victim with a lot of different people saying a lot of critiques. And it felt like she felt out of control. And her only way to say, I feel hurt, I feel angry, I feel sad, was to remove herself from the situation.
That's
Do you
right.
think that's you're, accurate?
You're absolutely right. And you certainly have a therapeutic sense about you, right? I wonder why.
Shout out to Amy and Dr. K.
All right,
thanks
then.
For your help.
That's right. And we're supposed to learn from these things,
right? That's right.
Absolutely. That is, you know, dead on what happened with her. She just could not deal with the pain that was brought up in that session. So for her to sit there and say, you know, I'm really feeling mad right now, or I'm really feeling upset, that was her way that she had to do it in that bombastic way. But I think it just completely changed the way that she viewed herself, that when she came back on that reunion, she ended up having almost a breakdown in order to build back up.
Right.
And so for those people who say, and you hear it all the time, Sarah, oh, this reality stuff, it can't be real. Oh, they're making this stuff up. No, this stuff is very, very real. And what happened there therapeutically was meant to happen. It was very real. And I believe it really changed who she was, in that she was able to help a lot of other people from that point.
So when I watched the reunion, that arc, the first time, I actually, to be honest, had a similar reaction to Claudia Jordan's, which was watching this on the couch and thinking, is this real? It felt so strange to me in the moment, and the hug and everything else. I was like, is this actually really happening? And then I watched it again recently, And you know what? It really did feel real. I don't know what changed in my brain chemistry where it just, I really felt, it felt produced to me in the moment. And when I watched it again, it really felt like she was becoming undone. That for some reason, for whatever reason, she could have avoided talking about her mom or talked about her mom openly in the past. And I would think this is what happens with trauma, is that sometimes just something that wouldn't have triggered you before can trigger you in the moment. And it seemed like that is what was going on with Nene in that space.
If you know Nene Leakes the way that you and I know Nene Leakes, the way that I know Nene Leakes, she could have handled that any number of ways where she would have come out of it really looking fantastic. Instead, she could not help but deal with and address the pain at that moment. And I want to talk about that for just a second. Address that pain to the point of where she could not go on. Now, I know people watching it are saying, oh, well, you know, she was just getting a lot of attention for that. It was a cry for attention. Bit more than anything, it was a cry for help.
Yeah.
You know, this is a woman who did not have a good relationship, you know, with her family members, in a way that she really needed to, with her father, in some ways with her mother. And she just, as much as she craves attention, that's not the kind of attention that she wanted.
Right.
But it, I believe it really opened her heart. And what it really did was that I heard from so many of her fans who it opened the door for them. If Nene could do this, then we can do it. We can revisit that very basic visceral pain that we feel around some of the traumas that we experience, you know, as we grow up. And the other thing that I wanted to add to that is, again, this whole idea, people ask, well, is this stuff real or what have you? And look, let you know, you do this so well. You know that there are some shows, and I'm not going to talk about which ones they are, where, you know, some of the stuff is produced, absolutely. But it's also, you're making a, when you become a reality star, you're making a deal with the devil, in that that camera is on you, and you can't just show the good stuff. You can't be just a Girl Scout or a Boy Scout. You have to show all aspects of yourself. And people don't realize that when that camera hits you, that's almost like a truth serum. That's almost like a therapist being in the room with you, because you know so many people are going to call you out if you're not genuine.
Yeah.
Does it also reinforce some bad behaviors? I think absolutely. Because this industry is about, if you're not in a light or doing something that's calling this tremendous amount of attention, that is so interesting, you can't be just a regular person. You've got to be an enhanced sort of personality to be on a reality show.
Sure.
So I think that's where we see a lot of people, you know, acting out in certain ways.
Noting your experiences on season seven, it definitely felt like that arc led to Nene showing a side of herself that was truly vulnerable, and that she was maybe a little bit afraid to show. But then at a certain point, she was too out of control with her emotional responses in the best possible way, where she couldn't help but show us that side to her. In the seasons following, it feels like she's kind of reverted back to being, I don't know that passive aggressive is the right way, but less open to revealing that. And I don't know if that's because she's applied a suit of armor. She's kind of already gone through it and doesn't feel safe or comfortable revealing that part of herself again, or she's kind of disconnected a little bit from the idea of having to do that. Like, she's like checked it off her list. And I don't mean that in any kind of dismissive way, but just in the sense that she showed that part of herself and she doesn't necessarily feel a need to be that vulnerable again. It's also a strange scenario when you're sort of working with these women, where these, some of them she's truly good friends with, others she sees when they film, and that's kind of the nature of this. But how do you explain the fact that we haven't necessarily seen that vulnerability? Is that something that you've talked with her about?
And I haven't talked to her about it, because she is now much more centered on taking care of her family,
okay.
of taking care of her children,
mm-hmm.
Because this thing that we call fame
right.
sometimes can be very toxic. And, you know, she is a, you know, a mother lion.
Yeah.
You know, you can mess with her, but don't mess with her kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she can call her kids names, but don't you dare do it.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
And so I think that's where her concern is, the cancer situation that Greg went through and
mm-hmm.
came out of it, thank goodness, and what a courageous man he is. That is what was her focus. And I think you're absolutely right. This is a situation, Sarah, where you expose yourself. You are the most vulnerable than you've ever been in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so how many times can you do that without beginning to now damage yourself or maybe even damaging your brand?
Yeah.
So she allowed that to happen. She allowed that extreme vulnerability. She allowed that breakdown to happen. But knowing NeNe Leakes, if that continues to happen, that's something that's going to happen behind closed doors because she's got other agendas she has to take care of on the air.
Has she ever discussed with you, and do you envision a time when she will leave Housewives again? I mean, she's left before temporarily and then returned, and it feels like she's almost in a place now where she might be growing on from the franchise. Is that something that you've talked with her about?
I haven't talked to her about it, but I think I have a unique perspective
yeah.
on it. Housewives of Atlanta has made NeNe Leakes a household name.
Right.
It's made her Americana.
Right.
It's resulted, and with her great talent, resulted in her having comedy roles, dramatic
mm-hmm.
roles, being involved in all sorts of areas of the media industry.
Mm-hmm.
She is a businesswoman. She's
mm-hmm.
opened all sorts of different, you know, jewelry, you know, clothes stores
sure.
and so on.
Mm-hmm.
At times, she has outgrown that particular franchise, but she is a very smart woman and she knows where her bread is
right.
buttered. And I think people have learned that when you have something that is so successful, it's great for you to leave the band
mm-hmm.
and do your own recordings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And do your own solo records.
Mm-hmm.
But you always affiliate with that band and you come back every couple of years. And I think that's what we're going to see with NeNe Leakes.
Right. That she might dip in and out, but she'll probably always have
absolutely
toes
and,
in
and it's
yeah.
And it's one of the best reality shows on television. It's been a mainstay.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a very special relationship with Andy Cohen.
Yeah.
You know, at times she gets really upset and really pissed off with him, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, they benefit one another, and from my understanding, they will always keep some sort of a very strong relationship.
Have you spoken with any other members of the Atlanta franchise or any other Housewives franchise? Has
yeah.
anyone else
yeah,
reached
yeah.
out to you for support, for help, for feedback?
I continue to work now, and I can't mention any names, with other people in on reality shows.
Okay.
And work. Have worked with them steadily. I will tell you someone who I saw Candy Burris, and I love Candy.
Love
yeah,
Candy.
She's just great people. And when we run into one another, the housewives and I, you know, a lot of hugs and kisses. They're really, let me tell you, I know people see them sometimes as being perhaps not the friendliest people, but they would give you the blouses off their backs, you know, if they know you.
Yeah.
And they know how this business can be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my hat is off to all of them
mm-hmm.
as to the kindness that they do have,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a more personal arena. But from what happened with NeNe, I spoke with Claudia Jordan several times because I know Claudia wanted to start branching out and doing more kind of like therapeutic work on television. So I think that's something that at some point you may see more of.
Wow. And Claudia was one of those interesting cases. She ended up being a one season wonder, which I felt was such a disservice because she was so charismatic during her season in Atlanta and so dramatic in the best possible way. I thought she gave great TV, not just in the arguments versus NeNe, but just thought she had such an interesting arc, and I would love to see her come back one day. I thought she was fantastic.
Well, she's a resilient person, and from there, she went on to radio.
Right.
And I'm sure she'll be doing more things. We all know, you and I know, and those of us listening to this incredible podcast who are in the business know the favorite saying or the favorite excuse that comes from those in charge in the media. We've decided to go in another direction.
Right? Which, why? Go back.
Yeah.
Go
we've decided to go in another. We love you, but we've decided to go in another direction. Or you never hear from them again.
Right.
When they fire you, you're gone. It's not about, oh, well, let me go back on TV and say goodbye and that sort of thing. Some of the greatest talents they've had, they just cut them off and that's it. And look, if you're part of this business, you know it, and you don't take it personal.
Right. And did you have a conversation with her about that once she...
With Claudia?
Yeah, once her contract wasn't picked
up? No, I didn't. But people know where to find me.
Right.
And I always get calls from people who may need to talk to someone. And once I work with someone, whether you're a celebrity, whether you're an athlete, whether you're an NFL player, whether you're just someone walking down 57th Street and, you know, we've talked for a few minutes, my phone's always open. The door is always open.
Has Bravo reached out to you to have you work with some other housewives or Bravo celebrities?
Not recently.
Okay.
When I do work with individuals. And here's how it works. It's very interesting. So
yeah,
I'm going to give you some inside
information,
right? So quite often what happens is, for example, Andy Cohen never calls and says, you know, other than commissioning a show for me, he talked to Carlos King. He found out, you know, that I have a very interesting family life also that is reality worthy. And he commissioned a pilot.
Oh, wow.
But other than that, what happens is you will get a call directly from that person on that franchise,
okay,
you know, whomever the housewife is, a family member. And they will say, can you offer me counseling? I need counseling. This is what happened with Housewives of Potomac, because I did that show. And so you start doing therapy.
Yeah.
The producers find out that you're doing therapy with that individual. And then the producers say, oh, that seems TV worthy. Let's see if we can do more of that. And so then they put it on the screen.
And remind me, Potomac, were you Skyping? Was it in person?
Yes.
Yes. It was Skyping, right?
I Skyped, and I also did some in-person work.
And who were you counseling on Potomac?
It was Charisse.
It was?
It was Charisse. And I believe this season, is she a friend to the show?
She hasn't been on. So they're filming now. She wasn't on this past season, but definitely the season before. So she went from being an OG to a friend of the fans. Love her and would love to see her back full time.
She's an amazing person. And because we did this on TV, so I can discuss it. She was going through a lot of a lot of pain about a divorce with her husband.
Okay.
Who was a college basketball coach and a very successful one. And so her kids were going through it, her son and her daughter. And so that was her major concern. And so we did a lot of good therapeutic work with her family and with her kids and with her. And I would say that was one of the more constructive situations that we've had on reality TV. She turned out to be absolutely fine. She's great. She's strong. She's amazing.
I would love to see her back full time. She's such an incredible woman.
As I would too. Yes, absolutely.
And is she someone that you've kept in touch with since?
You know, she has a very strong presence on Facebook and social media. She does a lot of philanthropic work.
Uh-huh.
You know, she doesn't have to work.
Amen.
She doesn't have to work.
She did her job.
Yeah, but she chooses to go out there and to help as many causes as possible.
Wow. That's fascinating. I mean, I'm also curious. We have a segment on Andy Scrolls called Satchels of Gold, which is in honor of a previous New York housewife, Kelly Cloran Ben-Simone, who I would love to recommend to you.
Okay.
I think we could use your services. That would be great. But anyway, I have some satchels of gold for the soul, just a few different scenarios affecting different housewives and different franchises. And I want to get your thoughts, Dr. Jeff.
All right, here we go.
So have you heard of Teresa and Joe Giudice?
Absolutely.
Okay, New Jersey housewife. They've been fighting. It's sort of like they fought the law and the law won. They both have been to prison relating to some legal issues that they've had. Joe is now unfortunately living in Italy full time, trying to fight his way back to the States. And on this season of Jersey, we've seen, while Joe has been away, a series of very contentious phone conversations that he's had calling into the family to check in, and their kids have sort of responded to the trauma that they have experienced with a lot of anger toward Teresa that we've seen on camera and off. If you were counseling them, what guidance would you offer to these parents, both of whom seem to be in pain, but unfortunately are kind of roping their kids into their very contentious relationship right now?
That's a pretty difficult one, because from what I actually know about this particular story, from what I know of this and what I've been able to discern clinically, is that, of course, Teresa and Joe are not in a good place as far as their marriage.
Totally.
And so what we tend to see in marriages, relationships where things are really kind of off the rails, is that somehow our children or unconsciously, we bring our children in and we try to have them take sides, even if it's something that we don't want to do. Or we get into a situation of where we erase a parent.
Right.
Joe has kind of erased himself in that, you know, he's sequestered out in Italy. By the way, Italy is not a bad place to be.
Amen. Right? I mean, please.
If that's your fortress of solitude, right? But my advice to the two of them would be that, yes, you know, Joe and Teresa, what you're going through is very difficult. But you have to think about the mental health of your children. What is it that they need in order to survive, in order to be the successful next generation? And with Teresa, I do understand that she, in some ways, has to rope them in, because it is about the franchise. It is about her work. It is about continuing the story arc. But she's got to really be careful and pay attention and not think her kids are as resilient as she thinks that they may be, because there's a lot of suffering they may be going through, the kids may be going through, that they may not even be showing.
Speaking of suffering, New York housewife Bethany Frankel and her ex-husband Jason Hoppe.
I love Bethany Frankel.
So, and she's one of the most successful housewives to come out of the franchise, as well as one of the most successful reality stars of all time with what she's created
Absolutely.
With Skinny Girl.
Great business person.
But when it comes to her divorce and custody battle, which is ongoing with her ex-husband, it has become incredibly toxic, and they've been fighting for their custody, for custody of their child Bryn for several years. Their marriage itself was 2 years, their custody and divorce battle at least double that amount of time. And it has become incredibly toxic, and I wonder to myself, you know, Bryn is now, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years old. How is that going to affect her when she gets older, assuming that she hasn't behaved in a manner where you can like see the results of the trauma? I wonder to myself, seeing all of these tabloid reports, what harm are they doing to their kid by continuing these battles In court and in the press, and how can they kind of get past it?
Well, first and foremost, I'm sure it's not something that they're doing intentionally. Perhaps what we're seeing and what we see from many battling, you know, divorced individuals or divorcing individuals is that the collateral damage from their own anger, their own rage, their own feeling of being victimized by the other partner, the collateral damage when they act out is actually the children, right? Mm-hmm. They're the ones who, in many ways, absorb the things that they hear that are being said about the other parent. Mm-hmm. They internalize what they hear about what one parent says to the other, because the fantasy for every child is for their parents to stay together, usually no matter what, unless there's some abuse going on, physical, emotional abuse, is for their parents to stay together. That's their fantasy. The pairing fantasies are part of our psychological makeup. And so they need to be aware that no matter how much they dislike one another, and it seems like they really do dislike
one another, really and truly,
they have to realize that they both love this child. They mm-hmm. both love Bryn, and therefore they have to give each other some credit for that and have a meeting of the minds, perhaps maybe some mediation where you have someone like a Dr. Jeff,
right,
you know, step in and work with them and look at the mental health of the child. And finally, to answer your question, what is the effect? Be it ever so terrible, there's no place like home. So if you come from a broken home, mm-hmm. if you come from a home where the environment is poisonous and toxic, that's where you're going to find yourself in a more comfortable position.
Yes.
So finding someone who has a lot of the drama, finding someone who has that kind of rage, arranging for yourself to be in a marriage where, again, what happened with your parents is happening with you mm-hmm. and your new partner mm-hmm. because it's all that you really know.
Which is such a crazy cycle.
Well, I have not been following the show, but if this child is not in therapy, they should put the child in therapy, not because the child is crazy, but as a prophylactic for the healthy development of the child.
And I think that they have, like, the court has mandated therapy, and
but it's too bad the court has to mandate
it's
the parents who really should say, look, I know we can't stand one another's guts, but we have to look at the mental health of our child.
And even if you think that you are protecting your kid from the drama of it all, if you are in the public eye, that child is going to hear about it from their classmates. They're going to hear about it from the parents of their friends, and they're going to be able to Google it. And you shouldn't have to be able to Google your parents talking about how much they hate each other.
A lot of these kids, it seems like they don't know much, mm-hmm. but both you and I know
they will.
They know everything.
Right.
They know everything.
Right. So, question for you. On the most recent episode of Real Housewives of Atlanta, Portia Williams got reengaged to her fiance, Dennis. And I sat in on the Atlanta panel during BravoCon mm-hmm. where, you know, we all knew at that point in real time Portia and Dennis were reengaged. They broke up when it turned out that he cheated on her during her pregnancy, and then they went to counseling, and now they're trying to make it work. So during BravoCon, when the moderator or someone asking a question in the audience referenced Dennis, the crowd started booing because we love Portia. We want her to be mm-hmm. happy, and
absolutely.
The overwhelming sense is that he doesn't necessarily deserve her. And Portia's response was interesting, which was, listen, you have no idea how difficult it is to try to work through a relationship, let alone one on camera. And for whatever, even though I sort of like understand why you're booing him, that's tough. That's like tough for her to take in because she's trying to work on her relationship.
Yes.
Like, let's try to lift them up instead of bringing him down. Fast forward to this week, the blogs were talking, the streets are talking, and there was a video that came out of Dennis at a diner late at night with four women. And while it didn't show anything explicit, the sense in the blogosphere was, is he starting to go mm-hmm. back to past mm-hmm. patterns? And my question for you is, how would you counsel Portia and Dennis to keep the focus on their relationship? And also, if someone has cheated before, can they really change that character?
All great questions. Well, I would say for Portia and Dennis, what I would say to them is that I would commend Portia for sticking up for Dennis during that particular situation that you talked about where people were booing him.
Because, and we're doing it because we love her.
And she said she understood. And thank God she does understand because when you cheat, cheating is wrong. Absolutely, 100%, it's wrong. There's no excuse for it. And when you cheat on someone who is pregnant.
Carrying your baby.
It is not just a slap in the face, but it's a mortal wound.
Right.
So she obviously made the decision to get therapeutic care, therapeutic help to work through this because she wanted it to work. Maybe not even so much for herself, but to have a father in the life of this child. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, what can we do but support her, because I could probably guarantee you that her family members and friends may not be so thrilled about that decision.
Right.
Because most people would recommend if someone's going to cheat on you on your pregnancy, while you're pregnant, carrying their child, while you're most vulnerable, while you're forming a life, really, is this person going to change their ways? So the advice I would give to Dennis, he was in a diner with these other women.
Late at night.
They were wearing strapless dresses.
Right, so I
don't know, right? He was drinking. I don't know.
Knows?
I didn't see that. But from what you're explaining, this is something that I say to people who have had issues with addiction. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that he has an addiction to cheating or to women or to sex. Mm-hmm. But the advice is still the same. People, places, and things. Stay away from the triggers that can possibly put you in a position where you're vulnerable in a moment of weakness. You go back to a behavior that is self-destructive or destructive to the relationship. So if you know that you've been busted for cheating and you're trying to change your ways, then no matter what your good intentions with regard to wanting to be faithful, don't put yourself in a position where you're not with your wife or your partner and you're sitting with four people, you know, in this case, four women.
Right.
Right?
Late at night.
Late at night or even in the day, but, you know, especially late at night. Mm-hmm. Don't put yourself in that position because you might slip and fall. It's a slippery slope. You know, it's like, someone who's had a problem with drinking. Mm-hmm. Well, don't go to the bars if you want to stop drinking or if you want to stay on that wagon. You don't want to fall off the wagon.
Right.
The other thing I would say to him too, Dennis, you know, when pictures like this come out, or news stories come out, you know, your wife, his wife,
fiance,
right?
Fiance,
Portia is already mortally wounded by what happened, how you embarrassed her, you know, how she was, you know, devastated by what happened. Mm-hmm. She made the decision. You both made the decision to work it out. Don't put her in a situation where now she looks like a fool, even though you probably, let's hope you didn't do anything wrong, sitting with these four women. Again, people, places, and things. Don't put yourself in a light that may shine upon you and give people the wrong impression or put you in a position where you might slip and fall.
And the interesting, I don't know if interesting is the right phrase to use, but Candy sort of cautioned Portia about Dennis specifically when they first started seeing each other. Dennis had a reputation. Then he cheats on Portia while she was expecting their child. What's the likelihood that he'll be able to stay faithful, assuming he has since they got back together?
I would say without knowing Dennis, and I've never worked with Dennis, I've never met Dennis. Mm-hmm. I would say anyone who is in a position that Dennis is in right now, where, you know, I would assume he's a, you know, very handsome individual. Is he?
I mean,
Well, that's Porsche's guy.
I don't know.
Well, I'll assume that he
money is very attractive. Right. I'll say that.
I'll assume that he had enough of a personality other things going on for him for Porsche to be involved.
Totally.
Because Porsche could have chosen anybody she wanted to. Right?
Completely.
So, chances are if Porsche is attracted to him, and she's a class A person, that he probably has a lot of other people who may be attracted to him or attracted to his money or his position or station in life. And now that he's also, a personality on TV, all of those things are going to be enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, TV has a way of taking just regular people and all of a sudden they're inundated with attention by people who may be attracted to them or who want to meet them or who want to be with them emotionally, physically, whatever the case may be. They become that light that the moths are attracted to,
right?
The flame that the moths are attracted to. So anyone in that position is going to have a really, really, really hard time in staying faithful. So I really do wish him and I wish her the best.
And one final question for you. Nene and...
You see how I stayed out of trouble, right?
You did. You did a great job. Nene and Cynthia are going through it now. There are rumors that Nene sort of began that there's a secret recording of Cynthia sort of talking shit about Nene. And Cynthia has asked her repeatedly face-to-face, just tell me who it is. And there's a sense that some people, aka Kenya, have said openly, which is this recording may not actually exist. And Nene has said there's a recording. No, there's audio. There's a recording itself. If you were counseling Cynthia and you were talking to a patient who's saying, I have asked this friend specifically for information and they refuse to tell me, what should I do next? How would you counsel her about whether or not that friendship is worth saving?
Well, I would say to her, and I would say to Cynthia, because I've met Cynthia, who's a wonderful person.
Yes.
Wonderful person. Met her husband at the time. Wonderful. And,
Peter's great.
Yeah.
They're better separate than together.
Yeah, I've hung out with Peter down in Miami at his new club and
Bar
all that
one.
Kind of stuff.
Okay,
yes,
cool,
yes,
cool,
yes.
Cool.
I would say to Cynthia, why are you concerned about who may be talking about you? Why are you concerned about that particular recording? Because now you are dependent on someone else's opinion of you.
Mm-hmm.
A true friend will certainly not do whatever it is that you think has been done or whatever has been said about you. If Nene says there's a recording or something going on, I would tend to believe Nene. She's not a liar. She's many things, bombastic, can be very, interesting, but not a liar. And so for Cynthia to get really hung up on that, I would say it's time to get past that and really rely on who your true friends are. And perhaps Nene's being put in a position that she does not want to be in revealing what was said or where the recording is or what's going on. And too often we get caught up on the opinions or how other people value us when it's really how do we value ourselves.
Oh my God. Yes. I would need a tattoo that to my arm. My God. Dr. Jeff, this was absolutely fantastic. I'm so appreciative. I feel like I've learned a lot. I need to give you a copay. That copay is going to be a smile.
No. Thank you, Sarah.
My pleasure. Tell the listeners how to follow you online. Where can people get in touch?
They can go to my website, Dr. Jeff Gardier. .com, DrJeffGardere.com. But they can find me anywhere on, I'm all over social media, as
Love
you know.
It.
Yeah, Twitter and so on. And it's they can always reach out. They can find me on Psychology Today if they want to get some therapy.
Oh, yes.
Right?
I feel like I got some today. Yeah, my God.
Yep. So they can go to Psychology Today, but they can go to my website and all my information is there.
This was fantastic. I have to thank you again. This was really informative.
I want to thank you because I really had a good time and you had me really process things and think about things that I've really kind of not thought about before. And that's going to, I think, give me a lot of the prep that I need for some of the things that will be coming up in the future. And I'm going to let you know what they are when the time comes.
I would love it. And I would truly, especially this season in Atlanta, would love to see you back. So my hope is, Bravo, if you're listening, I would love to see you back. You know, Potomac definitely needs you. Atlanta definitely needs you. But, you know, the experience of watching you, knowing that you were coming today and watching you on Atlanta really reshaped my viewing of those episodes and that arc. And it would be great to see. And Nene needs you right now, Dr. Jeff. It would be great
well,
to see
you know what?
TV.
As you're too young for this, but there was a show called Mayberry RFD.
Okay.
Okay. And this was an outgrowth of the Andy Griffith show.
Oh, yeah, 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 of course.
And if you remember, forget about Mayberry RFD, but the Andy Griffith show.
Sure. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah, of course.
So there was Aunt B who was there. Remember Aunt B? Aunt B was Andy's auntie.
Okay.
And she'd always say, and this is for Bravo, Andy! Andy!
Andy, Dr. Jeff is calling. Answer
Call
the phone.
Me Andy!
Well, hopefully, I mean, you mentioned a pilot that you've been working on with some folks from Bravo previously. So hopefully we'll see, you know, your own show in the future. That'd be great.
You know what? Everything is in divine order.
Yeah.
And what will be, will be.
Amen. Well, thank you so much, Jeff. This doctor. Oh, my God. I just called you Jeff. Oh,
oh
my God.
That's
like,
wonderful.
Okay.
That's all right.
Oh, my God.
Listen, you can call me anything you want to. Just don't call me late for supper. Okay.
Boom.
All
there
right,
we go.
Ba-dum-bum.
Total pleasure, and I would love to have you back anytime.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Wasn't that really, I really enjoyed talking to Dr. Jeff. I thought he was so interesting. His responses to things through the lens of being, you know, a psychologist are really, really fascinating. And I do that definitely on a JV level on Andy's Girls every week, but it's so interesting to get his thoughts. And guys, I want to hear your thoughts. Comment on the IG post for this week's episode at Dame Galley. Tweet me at Sarah Galley. Have an idea for what I should call the bonus episodes of AG that'll be up on Patreon soon. I want to get a title from you. The winner gets a prize, and that prize is knowing they're number one and maybe a magnet. So let me know your thoughts and feels on this week's episode. What do you think of Lisa Vanderpump's handling of the Brett and Max sitch? What do you think of Brandy? Yeah, that's how I'm gonna call her right now. Brandy Redmond's weird apology tour. Do you think she should be back on Dallas? What do you think of Dallas continuing? Can we believe that they're filming right now? Because I certainly can't. Guys, this week was such a pleasure. Can't wait to kiki with you again soon. And, you know, c'est bon. What a pleasure. What a priv. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And hope you like this week's AG. Bye-bye.